Welcome to the Gentleman's Journal podcast. I'm Harry Jarman, the founder of Gentleman's Journal, and today we're joined by Justin Haas, our watch editor at large. As well as being an esteemed watch writer, Justin is also a keen watch collector. What he doesn't know about watches, frankly, isn't worth knowing. Today we discuss the current trends in the industry, as well as the outlook for the rest of the year. We hope you enjoy. Hello, Justin.
Harry, my dear boy, what a treat it is to be with you here today. Second time lucky.
Yeah, this is the second time lucky. Just so you know, listeners, we've been having a few technical issues. So we just had Martin, the sound engineer, in who's got everything working. And all the lights are showing the right thing, so we're good.
It looks like you've upgraded the kit as well, Harry. Yeah. So it's one I came last time. Different kit.
We'll give it a go. Lots of investment. But here we go. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Pleasure.
It's great to have you first time. As I sort of said in the introduction, Justin is our sort of watch editor at large, and he is here to talk about all things watches, old news, current news, what's going on this year. It seems like the watch industry has just started off with a bang this year.
Well, I mean, there's been LVMH Watch Week in Miami. There's been launches by Piaget in Switzerland with the new Polo for 2024 and their 150th anniversary. It's crazy. Every year seems to build in momentum, and there seems to be more and more interest in the category. And as a result, those of us that write about watches tend to be kindly invited along to participate in these moments. But as we speak now, we've got Watches and Wonders on the horizon.
So I'm going to come back onto the Piaget Polo because I know that you went on a nice trip to Stade. It's tough life.
But we'll come on to that. No skiing, unfortunately.
We will come on to that. But let's just talk about these watch fairs because, I mean, obviously the big one's coming up, Watches and Wonders, but you've had LVMH Watch Week. Last year there was Dubai Watch Week. It's gone from like one or two, and now it just seems like there's one every quarter.
And you know what? I had a call last week actually with a friend of mine in another country in Europe who are about to kick off something very similar to Dubai Watch Week for this year.
Where's the demand coming from? Is this retail focus and press focus?
The last couple of years, there have been question marks around the strength and need for shows of this kind, mainly brought on by the brands. I can vividly remember Georges Kern talking, the CEO at Breitling now, talking about whether they would participate. They are now participating in Watches and Wonders, but they haven't done in the past. The same with brands like Bremont. In fact, Bremont in the UK here were probably the first to say, you know what, we're going to do our own thing.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a UK-focused event.
They used to do their townhouse.
Townhouse. It hasn't really worked. I think objectively they would probably agree. You've got to be there. You've got to be there for Watches and Wonders. And not only Geneva, but there's Shanghai as well. It's really interesting. LVMH Watch Week's curious because that's at the start of the year. It was in Miami. Great vibes. I wasn't given the nod for that one, unfortunately, but hopefully next year.
I mean, it's interesting it was in Miami though, because, you know, there's been loads of talk about that being the sort of new center of sort of luxury in the States. So it seems like it was like, there's obviously reasons that it was there.
It looked fantastic. You know, the weather set the tone for lots of positivity from our colleagues, and hearing from those that attended, you know, anecdotally, the feeling was that it was very enjoyable, but quite relaxed. It was different to Watches and Wonders. Watches and Wonders is a bit of a juggernaut now. You've got Patek there, you've got Rolex there, you've got Tudor there, you've got Chopard there. So you'd expect it to be quite well systematized. So, you know, as you know, we've been before together.
Yeah.
You're in your meeting, you've got, say, half an hour, and then you're out, and then you're on to the next, and on
it's
to the next.
It's kind of exhausting now. I mean, it used to be quite nice. It used to be like you could move around and they look after you, all the catering and everything else. And now it's, I mean, you're there for the whole week. I'm only there for like 2 days.
It's very much like a casino, a really nice casino. In fact, it's very similar because the casino, they look after you, don't they? They look after you with the drinks. And, and so we get the drinks and the food, but you don't see any natural light for a few days. And it is fatiguing. And you sort of lose track of just the number of watches that are coming through and trying to pick out what's important. So what a year we've got ahead of us. There's lots to be excited about.
I mean, the year started in a weird way because obviously you've got all this, you know, there seems to be quite a lot of excitement around all the watch fairs. But then there is this sort of worry in the luxury industry in general in terms of a slowdown. I mean, Watches in Switzerland, I think their results, which were, you know, suddenly they changed their profit forecast. And there is just loads of talk about it in general. Saying that, Richemont came out with some amazing results and they were like hard luxury still there. So what's your sort of theory about where's everything? Because I, for me, just getting told different things every day.
Yeah. Well, I think what's really interesting, when we had a chat before this about the things we might discuss, you know, one of the key strategic plays that have gone on the last couple of years is that Richemont have moved away from working with retailers so much, a bit like AP have done, where they take control themselves, their margin goes up, their relationship with their clients becomes closer. And one of the key drivers and targets for Richemont brands, we're talking IWC, Cartier, Panerai, Jaeger, is to start building your community in your local city with your boutique. And as I can see, as a result, the margin's gone up and the performance from the brand has gone up. What's going on out there? Watches of Switzerland in particular have been hit by the news of the Bucherer acquisition with Rolex, I think.
Yeah.
In the sense that it just provides more uncertainty about that relationship. We know that Watches of Switzerland and other big retailers rely so heavily on Rolex and Patek. And God, a world without them in their lives, their balance sheets would look very, very different. And combine that with the move from Richemont and others to sort of take ownership of their own distribution now. You know, AP have totally gone from their networks. It's a scary place to be.
Do you think that's like a quiet thing that all the brands are doing behind the scenes? I always feel like they say that these retailers, they're so important to them and everything else. But quietly behind the scenes, they seem to be doing their own brand and investing in all of this. So do you think it's a rejigging, you know, of that relationship?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And AP were well ahead of it, to be fair. They were well ahead of it with their townhouse model, which is where a lot of these brands are moving, which is much more towards an experiential environment. Very few doors. That means you can control where the watches are going to some extent, not entirely. But, you know, I'm all for it because actually as a customer, you know, look, I've never had any bad experiences from retailers, but I think that the beauty is that you get to connect with a brand directly. You get to be welcomed into their world. You get to build a relationship with them. And that's got to be a good thing. You know, they're investing in bricks and mortar. They're investing in experiences. If you buy a big pilot from IWC here in London, the likelihood is you'll be taken to Goodwood. You'll be taken to the F1. Yeah. You'll have an opportunity to buy that next watch from them as well. Even Chopard. I mean, I'm thinking about Chopard because they had such a strong year at Watches Wonders last year with the 1860 model they brought out again with Sam and Dahl. We both admire the brand a great deal. Mm. They're going to be Watches Wonders. They are a brand that, you know, I've spoken to, because I'm desperately trying to get one of them. You can't get them unless it's at the boutique. So you've got to go and speak to the boutique and you've got to be welcomed into that world. So I think it's a good thing all around, but I would be very, very concerned as a retailer right now. Ironically, if we still had William & Son around, who were an amazing retailer, who were kind of before their time, they are no longer in business, unfortunately, but they had a focus on independent watchmaking way before it was a big thing. And so had they still been around, they probably would be doing incredibly well. And they'd have such a differentiation in the market. They would still be doing incredibly well.
This brings us on to a bit of a segue. But obviously, I mean, you're a big fan of some of these independents. I'm a big fan of some of these independents. Those people in the watch industry are getting slightly, there seems to be the dominant names. And I feel like there's all these beautiful watch brands coming out, like FP John that's just launched a London boutique, Laurent Ferrier that keep growing and growing and growing. I know it's a big thing to say, but there seems to be a bit more interest in these brands. And I think people are going less about the usual names and slightly going for something a bit more different. Yeah. And also their values are shooting up. It's quite hard to find some of these watches now.
Very, very hard. And for good reason, because they produce so few. You know, they really do produce very few. Ultimately, we got to a point where I think as buyers out there who had experienced a bit of everything from all the traditional brands wanted something different. And the independents offer just that. And they offer entrepreneurship that we admire. You know, they often started a business from nothing. They spent years, you know, for example, if we look at Anderson Genève, Sven Anderson spent many years at Patek Philippe. You look at Laurent Ferrier himself, spent many years at Patek Philippe, designed the Aquanaut at Patek Philippe. And so they started these businesses from nothing. Often they're not natural business people either. Yeah. So they're trying to fight for survival. Benoit Mintens at Ressence, one of a Belgian brand, you know, fought tooth and nail for years to keep the business afloat. But then from a customer perspective, you get to know these people and you really start to invest in them. And FP Jean, we talk about hundreds, you know, 800, 900 watches a year. Rolex at 1 million a year.
Very small.
It's a very different proposition. And I, for one, am a huge fan. The product is outstanding. I look at Laurent Ferrier, for example, and the finishing is some of the very best in the business.
They've gone up in price. Just seem like every year they get more and more expensive.
Yeah, and difficult to get on the order books because, you know, they've had such a good few years now that to get a sport auto, their titanium sports watch, you know, you're looking at a 2-3 year wait list, and that's not a made up wait list from someone at a boutique retailer who wants to keep you buying jewelry from them. Yeah. It's actually someone who's saying, hey, we can't produce it at the speed in which we want to.
Which is nice.
Which is really nice. I've been waiting personally for a watch from them for 2 years and I'm over the moon about that. And well, mainly because I've had to find the money over 2 years to pay for it. But, you know, it's been really a joy to wait for it. And I think in a world that we live in where everything is instant, to have to wait for something is really satisfying. So yes, it's been great to see independents, but we also have to caveat that by saying that some of these will not survive the next couple of years when things do become more difficult, because a lot of these orders may not come to fruition, you know. And that's the other interesting point, is at the very top of the market, I think we'll be fine. At the entry level part of the market, we'll be fine. But I think the ones in the middle, there's going to be a real squeeze in the next few years. There's going to be a squeeze, probably much like you've seen with, say, your tailoring clients.
Yeah.
The bespoke work is there, but you know, the off the rack, ready to wear maybe isn't. That's the way I
would
view it.
The top end's fine for
I think so.
Anything, yeah. And the bottom end is fine. But yeah, you're right. Anything in between is becoming a bit of a squeeze. Mm. You were lucky enough to go to Stade. Was that your first press trip of the year?
First trip of the year. First trip of the year.
And this was, again, a really limited edition. Tell us about what Piaget were launching.
Well, Piaget, probably the hottest brand in the world right now. Incredible to say that, because often people will immediately think of them as jewellery makers alone, but actually they have pioneered ultra-thin movement making for themselves and many other brands for decades. Very elegant, incredibly popular on the collector market. So vintage Piaget has become really collectible. When we think of vintage Piaget, we think of stone dials, we think of case shapes, we think of modest case sizes, which does appeal to the modern consumer. And one of their key models that everybody was wanting to be relaunched in a faithful rendition was the Polo, which is the sort of sports chic model in solid gold. Originally in quartz, launched in 79. It came in 28mm and 34mm to start with in quartz. Came in different material combinations, two-tone as well as a solid yellow gold. And let's not forget, in the last few years, we've seen the 222, then we've seen the Ingenieur from IWC. It's no surprise this year that the oxygen has been given to Piaget for their 150th anniversary to launch this kilowatt.
So it's limited.
It's not limited. It's just that this year, talk around the group that we were traveling with was that there would only be about 79-ish this year coming through. But it will be a tricky one to get hold of. Very beautiful. It's a mechanical movement now. So they've upgraded that. They've upgraded the size.
What's happening to the vintage models? Just has this suddenly made them go up in value?
Yeah. I think there's always a spike, and people could see it coming with the anniversary on the horizon. And if we went on to Chrono 24 now, we would likely struggle to find a nice example.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, they were trading for under 10 grand before. You know, you could have got a pretty decent quartz. Now they're gone. If you find one, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw them in the teens, even the 20s. You know, that's where I think they're at. But over time, that will level off, let's say.
It's an elegant brand, Piaget, isn't it? It's
beautiful, beautiful brand. And I'm a huge fan. I particularly like the Andy Warhol watch, which is not called officially the Andy Warhol watch. It's called the Black Tie, but it's this sort of oval shape with different tiered elements on the case. Just super, super elegant. I do suggest that if anyone hasn't looked or considered Piaget, that they do, because it's one of those brands that's just a little bit off the beaten track. Amazing backstory. And just to me, if you're interested or like stone dials, they're the ones to have from.
Are the new ones slightly bigger?
The Polo came in those smaller case sizes, early 30mm. Now it's towards the late 30s, so 38.
It's not massive difference.
It's not massive. No. If you tried on the 222 from Vacheron, the people within the community were making synergies between those two models. The 37mm 222 in yellow gold, it's not dissimilar on the wrist in many ways to that. Let's also comment on the fact that Piaget have always been, even when the original Polo came out, it was expensive. And Piaget is sort of unashamedly expensive. They pride themselves on high price point, and that's part and parcel of the magic and the elegance and the sort of glamour of and elitism that the brand has pioneered over the years. So it is an expensive watch, but it's a great watch. It's a wonderful watch. The execution is outstanding. The bracelet is just a joy. The way it's crafted to interlink with itself is just incredible.
And these 79, they're surely all spoken for now, aren't they?
I wouldn't know about how that process would really work, because I've never played in that realm. But I would say that they probably are. And, you know, yes, they probably will be going to the best jewelry clients of Piaget, you know, over the years. And let's be honest, no one's got a better solution to this allocation question now.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we're running a business and we've got 80 great clients who've been loyal to us for years, you know, let's be honest, if they want one, they're getting one.
Fair enough. Well, look, in the latest issue, you did your sort of trends for the, well, I guess, no, because this was the end of last year, but you were talking about a lot of the trends that you've seen that year. So I think it's only right that we discuss a few of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we've already touched on the direct consumer shift. I think a big trend last year was case sizes getting smaller. And for me, that was a big welcome thing, because I thought, yeah, there were so many that was getting too big. I think it also ties in with the fashion world, with the quiet luxury. Mm. And suddenly, you know, everyone going for this non-branded clothing, driven by succession. And it seemed that everything was getting a bit more tasteful and a bit more elegant, which we love at Gentleman's Journal.
And you tie that in with the sort of infatuation of all things vintage the last couple of years across multiple categories, and watches are no different. And I think you're right that it's followed a trend, because watches have grown in popularity to such an extent, they are part of the cultural conversation more often than not. You know, I can't quite believe how many people want to speak about watches at the gym, want to speak about it, you know, when I go for dinner with friends. You know, it's far deeper and wider now than it's ever been. And as a result, people want to be different. They want to have something that's unusual. And the real value has been within watches that are a bit smaller. You know, for example, I wore this today, which is a fairly small watch. It's a,
what
it's
have you got
Patek
on?
Philippe. It's an Ellipse.
Oh, it's lovely.
3738.
On a brown strap. That's interesting. I always see this as like a black tie watch.
Yeah, it is. It's time only. Yeah. I actually have got another strap, which I'm putting it on a burgundy strap.
Yeah.
Or purple, actually. But to me, it encapsulates, because I knew we were going to talk about trends, and this in many ways encapsulates the trend towards smaller case sizes, shaped cases.
Yeah.
Dress watches, you know, that's where we're moving. I think there's been a bit of a rejection on the hype we've seen in the last few years for sports watches, particularly steel sports watches. And I think one of the great challenges that brands will face now coming into 2024-25 is those that have been very reliant on sports watches are going to have to evolve and speak to new audiences. And yeah, we can see sizes coming down across the board. Even
so you think
brands,
that's going to be a big, you know, if you're talking about Watches and Wonders, you think we're going to see a lot of dress watches coming?
I think so. A lot of dress watches and smaller case sizes. But then again, it does take 2-3 years for brands to come to market with new things. So that's been bubbling around for at least 2-3 years. So I suspect we will. As well as that, you've got very much a unisex view on these things. There is no longer, and rightfully so, in my opinion, directive from brands when they make a product to say, this is for you and this is for you. It's much more, you take what you want. In the same breath, we see a lot more diamond executions, stone bezels, rainbow Daytona bezels, etc. So that's tying in nicely with this momentum towards,
Another one was the traceability. So especially in the straps.
Yeah.
I mean, Breitling did this last year, the year before.
Yeah, and not just the straps, and IWC have been doing the same, but in the boxes. And again, I think that's the right thing, because people rightfully ask, you know, when they buy their shopping, if they could have it in a paper bag rather than a plastic bag, or they bring in their own bags. You know, why do we have watch boxes that are shipped around the world? Often they've been made in the Far East somewhere, and then they're shipped all around the world, and then they're shipped back around the world, and then they're given to you, and then it sits in your cupboard for decades. So they're, brands are rethinking their packaging and those boxes and the paperwork.
You collect your merch, don't you?
I love a bit of merch, don't get me wrong.
I mean,
I love the watch boxes,
you know, you need to keep it, don't you?
The watch box, the watch boxes, honestly, in the safe, I don't have any particular affiliation. The boxes actually annoy me. The paperwork I like.
Yeah.
What I don't want to see is the paperwork disappear to an online ledger. But I think that's where we're going. We're going to have all of that logged on an online ledger. Yeah. But I like the paperwork.
An NFT.
Yeah. I smell the paperwork. I go in and I see it from the 1980s and I'm smelling it. And I'm like, this is great. The boxes are a problem. And so we're seeing traceability in the straps. We're seeing more consciousness around the material. Look at Chopard, again, to reference that Lucent steel and fair trade gold. And people are, you know, are they interested? I'm not entirely sure. I speak to a lot of collectors and a lot of friends who are buyers. It's certainly not the first thing that they talk about. I'm buying that because of the traceability. I'm buying that because of the...
But it's a factor. It's becoming a given though, isn't it? You know, you expect these brands to be doing
Agreed.
This.
And if we don't see that, then it's probably a turn off. And it's really interesting. So I think, again, we'll see more and more of that this year. We'll definitely see more conversation around accessories generally and traceability.
Tag came out with those sunglasses, didn't they? So the wraparound sunglasses. Yeah. That was like one of their big stories at LVMH Watch Week.
What do these glasses do? I didn't even read it.
I think they're for running. I think they're marathon shoes, but they look really cool. But I was suddenly like, God, this is meant to be launching about watches, and the biggest news stories come out. the sunglasses, which I guess, you know, again, it's a brand of that size. It's a pretty big brand. Mm. Maybe they're just looking to go in different directions.
I guess that speaks to the lifestyle element of these brands. You know, I think we need to speak to new audiences. We need to, you know, watchmaking still can be quite insular. And I'm speaking as an advocate for the industry in a very small way, is, you know, we need to open it up to more people. Maybe that is a way to do it. I also do think, though, there's joy in a brand that just sticks to what it does and what it knows. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, Porsche and Langer and Leica. I mean, although Leica has played around in the watch space recently.
Yeah, I was about to say, they launched a watch last year.
So we're seeing that. We're seeing maybe a dip in the toe in the water around your core offer into new categories for brands in the luxury space generally, which is interesting.
Let's chat about one brand, Audemars Piguet, which seems to having a big year this year. I mean, obviously, change of management.
Yep.
Have you met the new
CEO? I've not met the new CEO, no. I think it was certainly a conversation I had with colleagues when we were at this trip recently, was a few of them had had the opportunity to interview the new CEO and the exiting CEO, Mr. Bernemias. The reason this is so interesting is that this man came in and took the business to a whole nother level. I think they were a business probably turning over a couple of $100 million a year, and now they're into the billions. And so he, within a decade or two, has done an amazing job of broadening the reach. He's spoken to new audiences. He's controversially produced a lot of product with rappers and athletes and limited editions here and there. And he's done that and ridden the wave through the rise of the sports watch and the Royal Oak and the Steel sports watch. So that's really interesting. And he decided to leave. Did he decide to leave, or was he asked to leave? We'll never know. But he is leaving, and he has, in fact, he has left. And the new CEO is in situ, and it's a woman, which is unfortunately still quite unusual for the watch world. And coming into a job that no one will be envious of, because you know, it's like when you're taking over the Premiership League winners from last year. You know, where do you go after that? And especially after how deeply and aggressively he's pushed the Royal Oak. The code 1159 is gathering momentum.
It sort of is. I mean, it got slated when it launched, and I think everyone was just like expecting. But now it seems, I don't know, I would say coming of age would be the wrong thing, but it just seems like people are becoming a bit more positive about it.
One of my big picks actually would be to keep an eye on the code 1159 for this year. Okay. So I do think that we're going to see some really cool dial executions. Predominantly the issue that people had with that watch was the typography that they used on the dial. It just wasn't in line with how nice the case was and the new movement they developed for this model. So if they can come down in size, and I think they already have down to 38-ish, I think that's the sweet spot for the model. If they can then use that dial, like they have done already for some high-end models, complicated models, it could be a really sexy watch. And I saw one in the wild. I saw Perpetual Calendar one with an Aventure in stone dial in Geneva a few weeks ago. And this guy, it looked fantastic. It really did. Really, really did. So I think there's more to be had there.
Do you think they've got anything like big launches coming this year? Do you reckon it might just be a holding year?
Well, they're not at Watches and Wonders, but we'll see something coming out before. No, for sure, no doubt, we'll definitely see something coming out before. In fact, I know, because I'm going to.
I mean, let's talk about Watches and Wonders. I mean, look, we've all been getting these emails through organising appointments, getting ready. I mean, like, there's very little we find out. I mean, they do their pre-releases. Some stuff we might know about nearer the date. But who are the big brands for you, like, that you're going to be keeping an eye on?
There's a few that I always tend to gravitate to immediately. IWC, Vacheron and Lange are the three that I sort of always immediately go to. I tend to go to Lange first because I like to see the giant clock they have on the stand every year. And that giant clock represents, often working as well. In fact, it is a working example. And that often represents the new model. There's an anniversary this year for them for the Lange 1. So that's really exciting for me, because to me, that is the one watch that I own that I think would be the one I'd keep above almost all others, because it's such an interesting watch and a modern day icon. So I'm going to go to Lange. I'd like to see more in the traditional size, the 38.5 millimeter Lange 1. And I'd love to see some grain dials. I'd love to see even a sporty take on it, maybe, and with a bit of loom. You know, there'll be something exciting there from a Lange 1 perspective. Even a complication element, I don't know, like we've seen in previous models, like last year, the Chronograph and the Odysseus. So Lange 1 and Lange will be a focus. Yeah. Vacheron have been smashing out the park in the last few years. Vacheron have been flying.
They had the 222 last year, which sort of was one of the stars of the show.
Absolutely flying.
They're doing much more push into women's watches, aren't they?
They are. So the 222, actually thinking about it, was 2 years ago. But they have so many models. You know, the Traditionnel, the Patrimony. Talking of dress watches, I think they'll move more into that direction, because there's a lot to be had there. I think when you think of a great dress watch,
Traditionnel is one of my favorites.
Of course, we've talked about it. Yeah, I think you've come very close to snagging one.
the extra thin Traditionnel and gold and a white face is stunning. I think it's a beautiful watch.
And they've got an amazing back catalogue that we still haven't really seen enough of yet. I love their Jump Hour references from yesteryear and the Mercator they've got. So Vacheron, I'm expecting big things from as well. IWC, it'll be an interesting one this year for IWC, because last year was such a big one with the Ingenieur, and it was a real success. And I've heard that the demand is there, but it's been difficult to supply that demand, just because, again, it's difficult to make these things at the speed in which people want them. So I think it's going to be an evolutionary year for IWC. Small design touches, but their stand is always an absolute joy. When you walk in, it's the first brand that you see on that side of the hall.
I think they always have the biggest stand.
And it's just always well done, like last year.
But it's quite, you know, it should be like that, because the brand, with all their sponsorships, trips to Formula One and everything, it always stands out. They've had like Spitfires in the stand before, Formula One cars.
Old cars last year. But let's not discount the big boys. We cannot look past Rolex, you know, after last year and the controversy of the celebration dials, the emojis. Yeah. That's going to be most people's focus. Let's be completely honest. Yeah. Rolex will be the focus for a lot of
people. Everyone runs to Rolex and Patek, first of all, just to get like the news out there.
And then, you know, as you say, Patek's going to be very big. Chopard, I thought last year was just such a big year for them. I thought they did brilliantly. And I think this year's going to be another smash hit again for them.
They're doing smaller case sizes this year with the Alpine. Yeah, a lot. I mean, 2023, that seems to be coming of age. And apparently their demand is growing.
I know for a fact that it is, because I've got two or three friends at least.
I've started seeing them on like people's wrists now. I think, you know, a year ago, I just didn't. And now I've just started going, oh, how did you hear about that watch?
I know. And I'm desperately trying to snag an early 1999, 2000, 1860 dress watch for the original one that Mr. Schuffler, he designed. I just think they're growing in momentum. Much like Piaget, they're traditionally seen as jewelers, but they're now absolutely leading the way in watchmaking.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, H as well, just touching on a few independents. You know, I have got a book coming out at Ressence, and that's a catalogue resume of all the watches they've ever made.
Yeah.
I really love the brand, and I think they're moving in a really exciting direction.
It's fun. I think it's awesome. Really fun. Awesome. And, you know, and it, for those who want something completely different.
Something completely different. You've got to go Ressence.
It's really out there.
H. Moser, again, doing amazing work. And then Laurent Ferrier will be there. And I have had a sneak peek. I won't say too much, but I do know that they've got something achingly elegant coming, which will not disappoint.
Yeah, good, good. Well, look, moving on to another brand, not necessarily a watch brand as we know it, but Louis Vuitton.
Yes.
It's one of the biggest luxury brands in the world.
Yep.
Watches has been part of it, probably not their focus, but now this year it's just gone like a big focus on watchmaking. Jean Arnaud, who's the youngest sort of heir of the LVMH dynasty, you know, seems to be getting a lot of attention. He's launched this Louis Vuitton watch prize. He seems to be very much man at the moment. Tell us quickly about the Louis Vuitton watch prize and what the thinking is behind it.
Before I get into it though, I've got to tell you my greatest failure watch collecting wise, which was a Louis Vuitton watch that I won at auction for 150 quid.
150
quid. It was a very small, delicate ball in ceramic. Bought it for £150, didn't know what it was, loved it. Did a bit of research, found out it was made by IWC in the 80s. In fact, it was one of the very first ceramic watches ever made. It's called the Monterey 2.
Yeah.
And then it started popping up online and it got a bit of hype going behind it. And a friend of mine offered me a couple of grand for it. And I jumped at it. I sold it. And then Mr. Jean Arnaud popped into my DMs. And he's a lovely guy because he's so connected to the collector sphere. And anyway, he wanted to buy it. And I had already sold it. And I was absolutely gutted. Wow. And I can tell you, they were trading upwards of 15 grand, 20 grand. So I really...
That was a really big error.
Can I swear? I really fucked up.
That was a big error.
I really fucked up. I know where the watch is. And if you're listening, Tom, I'm going to be buying that watch
back. Your friend still owns it?
He still owns it, yeah.
And he's not selling?
He's not selling. Yeah. He's not selling. But look, the bottom line is, Louis Vuitton have made amazing watches for a long time now, but under this watchmaking hub at Fabrique du Temps, which is making watches for a lot of different brands, including Daniel Roth, which they relaunched this year, and Giorgio Argenta, they also do for Louis Vuitton. And I think, you know, this is also part of a wider story of jewelry brands becoming real leaders in the watchmaking world, and Louis Vuitton is no different. Jean has recognized the importance of independent watchmaking, and he has strategically jumped on the back of that. And he's offered up this award, which provides mentorship from the team there at LV and broadly support from Fabrique du Temps, and a cash reward as well for independent creatives. And so the winner this year was Raoul Pages for his watch, which was very, very beautiful. And the other finalists were brands like, or individuals like Peterman Bedat and Simon Brett, who have created incredible watches. Simon Brett, in particular, probably the watch of 2023.
And there's a big judging panel for this.
Big judging panel. Yeah. Not entirely sure how that comes to fruition. We've got, you know, regular fixtures on there, like, you know, Waco from Revolution. We've got John Goldberger, a big collector. You know, we've got retailers from like the Hourglass, Michael Tay.
And I guess it's just raising, like, giving these watchmakers a bit of airtime.
I think it is. And that's a good thing. But he's also aware of what those partnerships could lead to. And we know that he started a series of watches, much like Harry Winston did under Max Busser in the Opus series. He's actually partnered with Rexep Rexepy, the hottest independent watchmaker in the world. And so last year we saw an LV Rexep collab, which should come as no surprise. Again, it was eye-watering amounts of money, hundreds and hundreds of thousands for this watch, but beautifully done, impossible to forget.
Impossible to get.
Impossible to get.
So the last big guy, we should probably talk about Swatch. Most recently, I guess their big news was at the end of last year when they did the Blancpain. And that was following on for the Amigo collaboration. It didn't seem as hot I wonder if they're going to be doing another one this year.
Oh, yeah, the Brego one.
Yeah.
Talking of Brego, God, we'd love to see more from Brego, wouldn't we? I mean, what a brand. It just seems to not be on the lips of anyone at the moment, but it's a shame. Swatch, yeah, smash it with Moonswatch. I think there's been some fatigue out there amongst those that follow the industry closely. But then my coach at the gym just rocked up this morning having bought one over the weekend, and he's over the moon with it. So it's still having cut through. I can still see people are buying them. It's still exciting. The brand is still doing incredibly well out of them. And actually, as a result, the numbers for watches under $1,000, whatever it might be, in the reports, you can see it skewed entirely based on the Moonswatch's success out of Switzerland. That's how important that watch has been.
Wow.
Blancpain, you know, in many ways, to be the follow-up, you know, the sloppy seconds is not the right word, but in many ways, the sloppy seconds, you're never going to get as good a response. You know, it's been done already and you're never going to... But it's a lovely watch. I don't see there being another one this year, but my God, I could be wrong. We're not going to see a Brego one. We're not. Yeah. We're just not. And I think any of the other brands, it just would feel...
It just wouldn't work.
Where are we going? It just wouldn't work. Apparently, it has shone some further light on...
They're doing well as a group there. I mean,
They are, they are. It does amaze me at times, because sometimes I don't know that... They don't speak the same language as LVMH, for example, who just have this intuition for luxury, which I don't necessarily think that Swatch Group does have in the same way. But it's really interesting. Keep an eye on that one for this year.
So anything else trend-wise that you think is going to be a big moment?
We should touch on Loom Dials, because I think that's a design piece. IWC, we've had the Black Aces watch that came out last year with a full Loom Dial. I've got an Elegant from FP Journe with a full Loom Dial. I just think... The brands speak to consultants every year about trends, and we've seen green dials in the past. We've seen...
There always seems to be a colour.
There's a colour. I think this year, instead of a colour, I think you'll see it's going to be Loom Dials.
Okay.
And I just have a feeling inside me that we're going to see a lot more Loom Dials, which is to say that we're taking, you know, instead of there being luminous material on the hands and the markers, we're going to see it on the whole dial. So at night, it'll really light up. And in many ways, from a marketing standpoint, it's kind of nuts to think we haven't seen more of them over the years, because... A watch is a marketing tool during the days of light and the hours of light, but then suddenly when you go into the dark, you don't see it. So in many ways, you're going to be in the cinema
now. Has anyone been doing this now, like strongly? Like, has anyone already done it, or do you just think this is a good trend?
I just think it's going to be something we'll see more of. I think the IWC one really struck me. I think it was because I did a little video on it, and I just was struck by how many people were engaged by it and thinking, some loved it and some didn't. And we're like, hey, this is another marketing play from IWC. And some were like, oh my God, this is amazing. I can tell you what, wearing one is great fun. Because when you're in a restaurant and it's low lights or in a cinema, it's just one of those little moments you get with the watch, which brings a bit of joy.
Yeah. Last brand, probably Cartier. I mean, again, seems to be having a great time, you know, last year.
Yeah, sorry, I should have mentioned them actually.
I know, I feel like we've left them out.
It's an absolute giant, but it's testament to the popularity of watches right now. There's so many brands doing so well that we could mention so many more. But Cartier, God, they've been crushing it. I think it comes back to that dress watch movement, that understated elegant movement, that quiet luxury, case shapes, modest case sizes.
But I feel like with them, it's gone from just doing like the tank, and now it's gone a whole nother level. And actually, that's what I reckon they might bring out something really, because they also have this amazing archive.
They do. I sat in, and it's different when you go to different brands. I sat in at Lange last year, and they came out with one watch. 100 watches in limited edition for this Odysseus chronograph. Go to Cartier, and I sat there for about an hour, and there was watch after watch after watch after watch. Honestly, the volume of new launches, it just blew my mind. It blew my mind that they could be making this many new watches that year. And so this year, again, we'll see.
You have the trays that come out.
Yeah, the trays just go. Again, they come in, they go. And I'm thinking about one, I don't even know what the name of the watch is, but it's, you know, looking at something like it was a cushion case, and it was made in white gold, and you would squeeze the case, and it was like, it was padded. It was a cushion case. It was honestly incredible stuff. And I think Cartier just flying. And
last year they had those amazing enamel tanks.
Enamel
dial
tanks.
Stunning.
The Tank Normal with the bracelet in platinum and yellow gold. No, incredible, incredible. And I know the whole story with the bespoke commission stuff is really hot right now. People getting commission pieces. Every day I log on to Instagram and see another video of someone picking up a new commissioned bespoke pieces.
And this is what, one-off?
One-off pieces, they will do for good clients.
For the right price, I guess.
For the right price. I mean, and difficult one, because some collectors want to protect their designs, which they're not always supported in. But it's really interesting. I mean, I just think they're going to have another great year.
These bespoke faces.
We're not talking wholesale change, but we're talking bespoke colours on the dial. We're talking the cabochon being bespoke.
And,
to this, the
and these are, I guess, north of the... Six figures.
Do you know what? I've never even inquired. I don't know, but they will be pricey, no doubt. They pop up on the secondary market every so often, but it's an interesting way of actually protecting your market, because we know exactly, as a brand, we know who's selling what when it's a bespoke piece suddenly pops up on the market.
Yeah. Well, look, I think that covers everything. That's a really good overview, and it sounds like a really exciting year ahead. I mean, it's not stopping. And I think it's only going to carry on. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure, boy.
I feel like we've literally whizzed through every single topic there. I guess we'll try and do another one after Watches and Wonders, because then we'll be all this news to report to you. But thanks again.
Pleasure. See you soon.